the buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. No timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, talking all things college basketball and life, because Dan's lifetime experiences are just absolutely mind-boggling. But we're going to stick to hoops today. We're going to stick to the verdict in the FBA trial against those three defendants, Dawkins, Gatto, and Merle Code. And Dan, as this drama, and it's the only way to describe it, man, is drama, unfolded with Merle Code, Christian Dawkins, and Jimmy Gatto. And the jury was out one day, 2 days, 3 days. The whole atmosphere around it almost was like a book you would read in the summer in a lot of ways, you know, the types of accusations that were being made. But then the verdict came down. What was your first impression when the verdict came down?
Not surprised. I mean, it's 94%, you know, conviction rate. Seth, sad. You know, I don't think anybody that has ever done what these guys are doing anticipated going to jail over. I think maybe the NCAA, maybe their own. I don't even think they thought it was illegal or against the NCAA rules based on, you know, these kids hadn't been there. I was sad for them, glad for the sport, I guess. I think that college basketball, you know, you get kind of tired of a couple things. You get kind of tired of people saying everybody cheats. And you also get kind of tired of people saying, I do anyway, of people saying, well, you know, everybody knew there were rumblings. Everybody knew. I didn't know what was going on. If you would have told me that the assistant coach at Louisville would have met in front of a gas station and given some kid $100,000 from a shoe, I didn't know I did. So it's kind of sad for those guys. I don't like to see people go to jail, but in a way I'm really happy for the sport, and I'm also anxious to see what happens moving forward. Who flips? Who starts talking? If other guys get involved? I think it's ongoing is also how – I will say this, and this is something, Seth, that doesn't matter, but I heard a lot of people in the sports media say, well, this shouldn't have gone to trial. Well, I talked to – you know, trial lawyers, and they're like, well, that's fine. People can say that. But the truth of the matter is, the only thing that matters is whether the jury thinks it should have gone to trial, and the jury thought it should have gone to trial. So that's it. It's over. I mean, it's not over, but that's it. You know, they convict, and now we see what the fallout is.
Yeah, and the fallout could be that in the next two trials, those defendants start to line up now and say, wait a second, if these guys are going to be guilty, I don't want to do 7 to 10 years. All right, I'm going to start to sink. And the judge, I think, made a strong statement in terms of how he handled the trial, because he basically did not make it about the NCAA, made it about the incident. But here's a couple takes that I have. One, please take your head out of the sand if you don't think the shoe companies and the universities are partners. They're partners. You don't pay Kansas $191 million if you're not their partner. And when you're a partner, and let's just use Kansas as an example, you're not paying them $191 million for their football team. All right? You're paying them $191 million for their exposure of their basketball team. Now, look, I'm not condoning anything that transpired. I mean, to me, it's absolutely sickening to see what transpired. But these shoe companies and these universities are partners. They're in it together. Why do you shoe companies have grassroots programs? They have grassroots programs for two reasons. One, to identify the next Michael Jordan. Number two, to be a support system in a lot of ways to their universities that they sponsor. Why does Kansas, and this is just my philosophy, I'm not saying it's true, why does Kansas sign with Adidas and not Nike? Probably one, the amount of money. Number two is there's not 8,000 Adidas schools. There's very few Adidas schools. So therefore, with all the Adidas grassroots programs, they almost potentially have the pick of the litter. Number three is, like, this recruiting process with the shoe companies and players, starts at an early age. And then, you know, like in eighth grade, it's, you know, can you play for a team that you get free gear, a sweatsuit, a bag? In ninth grade, it might be the parents asking, well, I want to be able to travel to my son's events. By their juniors and seniors, like we heard in the hearing, you've got parents pimping their own children. So, I mean, there's a lot to wrap your hands around. And, like, do we say that, well, by these guys being convicted, is it going to end what's going on? I don't know if it's going to end what's going on. I mean, there's always going to be people that are going to make their own decisions and push the envelope and look outside the box. But it bothers me because I really believe, and I'm not going to point fingers at any school, and we're going to get into this in the next question, but if I'm school X and I'm an Adidas school, you don't think this conversation takes place? Hey, Adidas, you know what? Things are going really well. We're excited to be part of the three, you know, three-stripe life, but, you know, you've got a bunch of players in your grassroots program, and I'll tell you what, anything you could do to help us, we would really, I mean, like, you know, we need Dan Dockage really bad. I mean, he's a guy that could put us over the top. He's a guy that could get us to the Elite Eight, to the Final Four, all right? Anything you could do, you know, please help us, you know, get this kid because, you know, you guys have relationships with his AU coach or his people, and you can find ways to do things that, you know, basically I can't do or I want to stay out of. You don't think that conversation takes place?
I think it takes place every day. Yeah, I think
every day.
I got to tell you, I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to lie.
You don't think they're partners?
I don't know.
Think the shoe companies and the schools are partners?
I think they are, but my experience, like, at one point I was working for a guy who was the most influential guy in college basketball, Bob Knight, and we didn't do that. We kind of treated the shoe company guy like, get the hell out of here. And I know the game has changed, so I'm going to say it absolutely happens. And I think the trial proved that it happens. I do.
Now, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
You think Sylvia D'Souza is right now ineligible?
What do
Not
I think?
Because they're looking into Sylvia D'Souza. Well, you know, one, they have a pro contract that he supposedly signed, but they couldn't verify his answer. His signature was absolutely a joke. The university, like, if he signed it, he signed it. I mean, it's a joke. So the university obviously is, you know, to me, that just says lack of institutional control. I mean, the point is simple. But more importantly, if Sylvia D'Souza is guilty until proven innocent, why hasn't the university taken any position on the coaching staff?
Oh, it drives me nuts. Matt Painter and I had this conversation yesterday. I mean, and actually, Seth, if you read what the chancellor said yesterday, came out in a vote of, support. I don't know about confidence, but certainly support of the basketball program and Bill Self. It was almost like they were saying, in this release that, hey, look, we did an internal investigation, brought outside people in, we found nothing, we're good, let's go Bill Self. I think it's absolutely absurd that the player gets suspended and Curtis Townsend or Bill Self, I'll name them, I don't care. I mean, our coaching. It's absurd to me. It's disgusting to me. It's like I listened, and I know you did too, or I read the excerpts of this trial. I saw the text exchange transcripts. And out of that, Sylvia D'Souza maybe should be suspended from Kansas. But at the very least, the coaches of Kansas should have the absolute same punishment, at the very least. These are the adults in the room. These are the people, you know, wasn't Self the head of the NABC, were guardians of the game and all that happy horse bleep? It's disgusting to me. And last thing, and I'll let you know, chime in anytime you want, Self actually sits up there as a moral authority when they announce that we're going to, quote, hold this kid out. It's a joke. I mean, the great Royce Waltman said it best. Get fired for anything, and I mean anything, in coaching except for losing, and you will always have a better job.
Well, Bill is president of the NABC. I
mean, there you go. Guardian of the game.
At least he was last year. And here's the thing. I mean, look, I'm not condoning what happened because I think what happened is 110% wrong. I mean, I just
– See, I don't know that I do.
Well, I do, because here's the thing. Until the rules change, here's the thing that people like until the rules change, you abide by the rules. Now, if you don't, if you think players should be paid, if you think you don't agree with the amateurism rules, if you, that's your right, and I respect it. I have no problem whatsoever. You know, if you think that players are being exploited, that's your opinion.
I get all that.
You have a right.
Yeah,
right?
My thing is different. My thing is, what do I got to say to St. Peter to get in? And if it's, hey, I gave a bunch of money to a kid that needed a bunch of money, hey, to hell with it. But that's how I look at it. You can look at it through all that basketball nonsense, but that's just basketball nonsense. The rules, blah, blah, blah. If the worst thing I do in my life is give a kid and his dad $100,000 that needs $100,000, and I got to answer for that, I'm doing all right. I'm just telling you, that's how I look at all that rule.
That's fine. You know, your opinion's fine, but here's the deal. Like, you know, you always said, like, everyone's doing this. So, well, I mean, like, not everyone is doing this.
Yeah.
All right. So some people say, you know what? Here's the deal. Would I like to be able to do that? Yeah. You know, does so-and-so need more? I don't know if Tugs Bowen's old man needed $100,000. Did he need $100,000? Did he want $100,000?
right.
You know what I mean? Did he need 20 to play in an AAU?
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, did Silvio D'Souza allegedly, and we don't know for sure, did his guardian need $60,000 from allegedly another institution, Maryland or Under Armour or whomever, to go to Maryland where he didn't really want to go, but you know, Adidas had to match it? I mean, here's the deal. I have no problem with people disagreeing with my opinion. And the whole thing about, you know, getting let into the gates. I mean, whatever happens, I guess. You know, we Jewish guys don't worry about that as much. you want to have a level playing field. Until it is changed, you have a choice.
Yes.
And that's the thing. And I mean, you know, shoot. I mean, it's just the way it is. But, you know, to me, why do shoe companies get involved in grassroots?
Do you think that? Do you think that
for other reasons?
Do you think
not just the good of their heart?
Do you think colleges should give up their money if you want to clean it up? Should colleges give up their Adidas money? Should colleges give up their Nike money, Under Armour, whatever?
No, I don't think they should give up, but they should also not act like they're not a partner with whomever they're dealing with, and they should also not put their head in the sand and say, you know what, if we're a partner and we're in this thing together, that we would like your support in helping us build our brand, quote unquote, and as we build our brand, you're building your brand, we're doing this side by side.
Do you
for the shoe companies to for Kansas to vilify the shoe companies when they know that they got in bed with the shoe companies, and there's a reason that you know there's grassroots basketball, there's a reason that they want support and access, greater access to those players. Let's not fool ourselves.
Who, in your opinion, is ultimately at fault here?
Oh, I think that what's ultimately fault here is people want to acquire talent, people want to win.
So the coaches.
So I think the coaches are as culpable as anyone.
Right.
There's no doubt about it. But now, you know, we're looking at only one form of this, because these next two trials, we're going to be looking at money managers and agents.
But money managers and agents, they don't have a market if coaches don't set the market.
I think the money managers and the agents, I mean, like right now, recruiting's all about having relationships with.
Right, but if some money manager comes up to you and says, "Hey, I got, you know, Tugs Bowen or whatever the hell the kid's name is, we need $100K," and every coach says no, not
the
doing it.
Coaches aren't paying it. The money manager.
If every coach says no, that's unethical. He's an ineligible player. We're not doing it. If every coach said that, there's no market, and the whole thing goes away.
Yeah, or the money manager says, "Hey, I'm really close with this kid. You know, I'd love him to play for you. All you need you to do is protect me, so when the kid comes out, I can sign him."
And you know that's not right according to the rules. And if coaches had any ethics, particularly out of our leadership, and they said, "Absolutely not. That's not how this game is being played," the market would go away. Now, it's never going to happen. It's a Pollyannic world. But if there is no market from these coaches, then there is no money manager. There is no none of this. And this is where there have been other industries that have cleaned themselves up. This is my biggest problem. My biggest problem is we can divert to shoe companies, money managers, agents, dads. But the truth of the matter is there's a market that the coaches agreed to and set all. And the most frustrating thing, Seth, the dudes that are the presidents of the NABC, Samson, Denny Crum, Bill Sell, are always involved in this crap. I mean, so you got the, quote, president of the Guardians of the Game, who, what are they guarding? They ain't guarding the game. They're guarding the gates of their university, or I guess they're guarding their alumni, or they're guarding whatever, their contract by being nefarious and winning games. I mean, coaches set the market, my opinion. Now, hey, look, Izzo told Bowen and them no.
Yep.
He set that market. There is no market for you here at Michigan State, and I respect the living hell out of that. If Patino said no, or he taught his guys to say no, you know what? There's no market. Some coaches have done it, and, you know, you and I both know Tom did that with Bowen. It's great. Everybody knows it now because it was in the trial, but, you know, to me, Seth, simple, simple, simple. Hey, look, here's a line. You knowingly commit a major violation. You are banned from coaching Division I basketball. You can coach anywhere you want. Hey, man, go coach Division II, Division III. I don't care. Go to pro. We're not saying you can't coach. You just can't coach in this because you had an opportunity and you screwed it up.
But, you know, and I think why that's going to happen, because here's what's going to happen. This is the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
In my opinion. And when I say that, I mean, like, because this next trial, think about the hours and hours of tape and interviews and wiretaps that were not allowed to be played in this trial. I mean, there was a salacious conversation between Will Wade and, you know, some dude, I don't even know, you know, who right. the guy was, regarding an international player. So once, though, unless those wiretaps end up under wraps and aren't exposed, I mean, there's more to come. This is the tip of the iceberg. This is the lowest hanging fruit to send a message to the next two trials to try to basically get guys to sing. Don't you? I mean, isn't that the way it works? I mean, I sat next to an FBI agent yesterday on my flight home from the ACC media day. And he exactly said, he said, this is where it begins. This is not the middle. And this is surely not the end. And this verdict now sends a message to the defendants in the next two trials to say, all right, you want to go to jail? That's fine. Or do you want to help us and basically save the rest of your life, you know, being in jail for 10, 20 years?
Well, it also got, and maybe you mentioned this earlier in the podcast, that Gatto, Code, and Dawkins, now they have even a big, I was talking to a defense attorney yesterday because I'm trying to get ready for this and I'm trying to know. And he's like, look, if the government thinks Gatto, Code, and Dawkins still has value to them, they will try to get them to flip and cut a deal, which, you know, they're already convicted, so those three are looking for jail. If they don't think there's value, if the government is done with them, then guess what? You're facing whatever sentence the judge puts down. And here's the other thing, and I think most people know this. In the state of Indiana, you know, you do a good day for a bad day, so you get a 10-year sentence, you can get out in 5. Federal government, you got to put 85% of your, no matter what you do, 85%. So you go 10 years, you go 8.5 years. Yeah, Indiana, you go 10 years, you go 5. So, look, there is, being tried in federal court is totally different, and there is a huge incentive for Gatto, Code, and Dawkins to flip. But that's only if the government thinks there's value in them flipping. It's a hell of a deal, Seth, coming up. You're right. It's a hell of a deal. This is the start.
This is just the very beginning. And, you know, it is obviously ringing out all throughout college athletics. Yesterday I was at ACC Media Day, and it was interesting, you know, usually media day is a celebration of the season and the start of the season. And, you know, the season's been moved up a couple of weeks and people are getting ready. They've played quote unquote secret scrimmages, which they're allowed to talk about after the fact, but not before the fact because they're secret, which is a rule in itself that I don't understand. But, because they're not secret. If they're secret, then why are you talking about them after the fact?
Right.
They were secret, but they're no longer secret.
Right.
But I have to admit, it was, with the hearing going on, and I was there prior to the verdict, everyone was on a little bit pins and needles. You know, you had Jim Larranaga there, who obviously was involved with the Nasir Little side of the trial, although he seemed in pretty good spirits. You had Coach K talk about a blip, and then he had to define what a blip was. So, I mean, you know, that was a focal point, and he redefined that a blip is bigger than you really think. It's a choice of words on a radar screen, which I didn't understand.
Oh, okay. He's being Coach K.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, you had, you know, a number of different coaches. I wouldn't, you know, basically say that it's a concern, but it's not across the board. But it was surely a topic of discussion. I mean, you know, how you were at Big Ten Media Day, and that was at the start of the trial. What's your take around the country from, you know, the coaches that we speak to all the time?
You know, Seth, that wasn't really any angst or concern out of Big Ten Media Day. I mean, those guys are – I don't think we've heard a Big Ten coach involved. You mentioned Maryland earlier. Maybe that's involved. But I asked guys – but truth of the matter is, nobody really was like, yeah, we're watching it, but, you know, done trying to get my team ready. So, again, I've always thought this. I mean, there's been a couple exceptions in my time around the Big Ten, but I've always thought the Big Ten is pretty straight up. And it's territorial. You know, Indiana recruits Indiana, Ohio State recruits Ohio, Michigan recruits Michigan, you know, that kind of stuff. So
right.
I think that's changed a little bit, no question, but I didn't feel anything different, Seth. I just didn't think anybody really had that big a concern about it. I will say this, though, Seth. I got to believe now that we've seen guilty verdicts. I bet you everybody's sitting there thinking, now, who did I talk to? Could I have been on tape anywhere? You know what I mean? I mean, because, Seth, let's be honest. I mean, I don't know if we've said this yet on the show, but we've all talked to the different guys covering this. If the verdicts yesterday were innocent for those three guys, there was a sense that maybe the United States government was going to back off. And the other sense, if they were guilty, which it was, there's a sense that they're going to go stronger with this. So
yeah, they've got it for look.
Yeah,
a blip. You talk about blip. A blip of the wiretap conversations have come into play so far. Who knows who else those wiretaps and what else is on those wiretaps? The mood in the ACC to me was a little bit, I would say the coaches were, I wouldn't say on edge because, you know, like, you know, you speak to Brandel, you speak to Jimmy Christian, they're business as usual. But, you know, I think, if you speak to the people maybe that are recruiting those guys, I would say cautious.
You know what would be interesting? It would be interesting to see if Brad Brunell, who went down, you know, supposedly to the wire with Duke, right, for Zion Williamson?
Sure.
What if you really talked to Brad Brunell and he's like, man, looking back at the discussion with Zion Williamson in Kansas about family needing a house, money, all that – and seeing that, you know, I wonder if he feels like, man, I got defrauded here. You know what I mean? Like, I was never involved in this because I was never offering this kind of stuff, assuming he wasn't. Like, I you know, it's like one of those deals where even I look back, Spies is an AAU program in Indiana. And Spies' name came up in this trial where they were trying to get kids that Bowen and other people offering $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 and working with colleges. And I remember two kids, Cam Stevens and Jamal Davis, back in the '90s, we couldn't even get involved with. And Jamal Davis shows up at my house. He's from my hometown a few times. But we couldn't get involved with because they were playing with Spies. I wonder, well, is this whole thing, you know, were they paying back then? Obviously they were. Did we really not have a chance? Why did I waste so much time? And I got to feel like man, if I'm Brad Brunell, I'm like, geez, we wasted a lot of time here and had no chance. You know what I mean by that? Is that, you know, that's kind of inside coaching kind of stuff. But
yeah, I'm surprised they didn't keep you involved just because I think a lot of times in recruiting, certain prospects will keep certain schools involved.
Yeah, we were a little bit involved.
Just to legitimize their recruitment, and then they go where they go. I mean, that's...
if you were Brad Brunell, and again, people, this is why you listen to this podcast, because we're giving you the real stuff on coaching. Like, this is real coaching stuff. If you were Brad Brunell, you suffer over losing that kid, right? Now you read this stuff. How would you feel? Would you feel
relieved.
Like...
I think
interesting.
Angry and relieved.
Interesting.
I'll give you a better one.
Why relieved, though? Explain the relieved part.
Why relieved? Because you know what? I wasn't party at all stuff. They knew that I wasn't going to go in that direction.
Interesting.
So therefore it was not, that was not even in the conversation. And that's why Clemson's name has not come up. An iota in the course of this thing. Let me ask you this. If you're Dan Radakovich, the AD at Clemson, and there was a rumor 2 years ago that you were thinking of letting Brad Brunell go and hiring Will Wade, let me ask you, how does he feel right now?
I'll use your word, my man, relieved. You know what I mean?
Relieved. Dumbfounded. He's relieved.
Now, Patino's still dumbfounded. He's walking around in circles somewhere in Louisville. Just being dumbfounded, bumping into buildings. But, yeah, Seth, like, in my world, now this is just my world, if I were an AD, it would be, you got to be kidding me. Particularly if it's a guy that I hired, over a guy that, like Brad has been successful enough there to keep his job, obviously. But if I say, I'm going to take the next step and hire Will Wade, and now Will Wade is going to be all over this stuff, Seth, I go to, what is that song by Garth Brooks? Sometimes I thank God for unanswered prayers. You know what I mean?
Listen to you dropping lyrics. That's
sometimes
impressive.
I thank God for unanswered prayers. Sorry.
There goes the podcast. So, on that note, now that we've digressed, when we come back, we will have live, in person, on the air, Notre Dame head coach Mike Bray. But first, you know what's not smart? Job sites that overwhelm you with tons of wrong resumes. But you know what is smart? ZipRecruiter.com/courtside. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't wait for candidates to find you. ZipRecruiter finds them for you. It's powerful matching technology scans through thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, and experience for your job, and actively invites them to apply. So you get qualified candidates fast. No more sorting through wrong resumes. No more waiting for the right candidates to apply. It's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. This rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/courtside. ZipRecruiter.com/courtside. That's ZipRecruiter.com/courtside. CourtSide. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Dan.
Yes.
Big. This is big.
Huge.
This is big. Welcoming in a guy from your state, a little ways from Indianapolis, but your state, the one, the only, 19 years at Notre Dame.
Legend. Seriously?
Does it his own way. He's the new thing. He's the Frank Sinatra of the ACC, because he does it his way.
Mm-hmm.
My man, Mike Bray. Good morning, Coach Bray. How is life?
Good morning, Seth. Good morning, Dan. Dan's down in the theater, down there south. We're up here north, man. It's cold up here, even in this state. It's getting cold. But, all good. We had media day. Got a chance to hang out with you yesterday down there in Charlotte, Seth. And back to reality, back to practice. We're getting ready, actually, Dan. We're going to scrimmage Cincinnati and Banker's Life on Sunday evening. So we're going to find out a little bit.
That's a secret scrimmage, though. Wait a second.
Oh, Yeah, I'm not allowed to say that. That's right. Oh, my God. See, well, whatever. Catch out of the bag.
Hey, before we get into anything, I was just singing a little Garth Brooks on this. Did you go to the show in Notre Dame Stadium?
Dan, it was unbelievable. Yeah. And it was snowing 30 minutes before the show. Half the stadium was full, and I'm thinking, they're not going to show. They delayed the show 30 minutes. There was not an empty seat, and everybody stayed till the end. First concert in the stadium, and then my man put on a show. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. Really cool.
I saw him a year ago here in Banker's Life, and you know, I'm not the biggest fan. I mean, I'm all right. Holy hell, that dude can put a show on.
That's what I said, the same thing. I listened to it a little bit, but I'm like, okay, I'm in. He's a showman. He is a performer. And so it was really cool, and I guess we're going to start doing some more concerts in this you know, newly renovated stadium because it has so much else we can do with it.
It's awesome. Seth, it's absolutely awesome.
Two Renaissance men. It's so impressive.
You ain't lying.
You two guys are like Renaissance men. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Because we went to – that's how low your level is.
And you guys go to concerts.
That's how low your level is. You're a Renaissance man in Seth Greenberg world because you go to a Garth Brooks concert.
Go to Garth.
Jeez. Come on, Hillbilly Slim. Raise the level.
You're killing me. All right, Mike, I got to ask you. I didn't ask you yesterday because we talked about it. This verdict comes down and everything. Just what's your take on the whole FBI investigation and everything that's going on in our game?
It sure does sound like since yesterday's verdict, a guilty verdict, that we got a chance to air some more things out that need to come forward. You know, just reading how this thing could unfold now with the next set of trials. And so, man, I think that's a good thing. We got to get it all out. Let's get it all out. Let's air it all out. Let's expose it all. We'll have to take our medicine as a sport and even the coaching profession as a whole. We kind of take a little bit of a hit. You know, I think one of the interesting things, you know, I was just reading about since the verdict is, you know, let's figure out now what the agents were doing all those years too. Get that out too. Let's go. Get it all out and let's try and see then if we can move forward. But it's going to take us some time, Seth. I mean, I do think there are some factions actually trying to communicate for the first time. And I said to somebody yesterday, I don't know if this G League rule is the right thing, but they specifically said they passed it in a direct reaction to Condoleezza Rice's commission's suggestion. So, you know, at least we're trying to do some stuff here. And the shoe companies, I think we know, they're going to stand down for a while. I mean, after what's going on. So I think from the grassroots standpoint, they're going to back up a little bit. And they've said they would give us some transparency, and they're trying to you know, the camps and combines that were put together, you know, those things have been highly criticized. We're not going to get an A this summer. Can we get like a B minus or a C plus the first time we try this? And maybe 3 years from now, these camps and combines in July are the thing to go to. I mean, so, you know, I think we do have some cooperation, but my feeling is, and even after, like, get it all out, man. Let's go. Let us all take our medicine, and let's do what we got to do.
Hey, Mike, I woke up this morning. What I do is I check my emails, particularly on my show, see what people want to talk about. And I got so many of these, and I'll go to you and ask you, will this corruption trial, which is we talked about, ended up with guilty verdicts, will that scare some cheaters? Will that scare people?
I think it can be a deterrent, Dan. For example, the shoe companies right now, you know, we all know their heads of state went to their grassroots people and said, I may not know everything that's been going on, but I tell you what, we better shut it down if it has been going, you know. I mean, I think at least that has backed up, and that was an avenue for, you know, some of this money flowing. So I do think it can be a deterrent as well.
Mike, I'm just going to follow up for a second. As a coach, and you've obviously lived your entire life squeaky clean and all that. Did you ever imagine, did you ever think anybody involved in this, whether it's coaches or shoe companies or whatever, imagine that something like this would be anything more than an NCAA violation as opposed to ending up in the Southern District of New York as a federal crime?
That's what's mind-blowing. There's right. No question. I think, right, that's what's mind-blowing. And I guess what we talked about maybe a year ago or a month after their press conference when they released all this, kind of, I remember the consensus was, maybe we actually needed to get to this level to hit the reset button because we couldn't do it by way of NCAA enforcement. But it's mind-blowing, you know, and it doesn't seem like, again, with the verdicts yesterday, it's some of the comments of the prosecutors, and back to their press conference, like, they're coming after us, and you know what? Let's go. Let's do it, and let's see if we can get it all out and try and reset this thing and have a little better atmosphere.
Hey, Mike, do you think that Dan and I were talking about this earlier. I say when this whole shoe company thing, this process starts like in the eighth grade. You know, you want to play for my team,
yep.
We're sponsored, you're going to get a bag, two pair of shoes. In ninth grade, if you're really good, you know what? We're going to travel your parents to an event. You know, by the juniors and seniors, you know, basically there are parents that are pimping their own kids to get the best deal. I mean, it starts that early. And then on the other side, you got the shoe companies. The shoe companies are paying, you know, I don't know what Notre Dame gets paid by Under Armour, but I know that, you know, the word for Kansas was $191 million or something with Adidas. They're almost partners. The shoe companies, you know, the way things stand right now in this moment of time, they're almost partners. And as partners, don't you think that no one put a stop sign up to saying, hey, don't help me with that kid. Just like USA Basketball sponsored by Nike. So they're going to go to these regional camps. They're partnered with Nike, too.
Well, I agree, and it's a really tricky relationship. I made a comment to my AD. We were back. We had just done the deal with Under Armour, and we were actually in Cleveland for the regional final in 2015. And one of my assistants said, "Hey, you know, Maryland got Diamond Stone." And I turned to my AD and I said, "Well, Maryland got theirs. When do we get ours?" I mean, I was training into, you know, thinking, you know, we're with Under Armour now. How are they going to help? Now, I wasn't specifically saying $125,000, but need moral support now if we're going to recruit in the Under Armour grassroots system. You know, we've all kind of, so it is a tricky, tricky relationship. And I know our deal financially, you know, forget the equipment with Under Armour is, you know, it's an unbelievable number. It's, you know, behind UCLA's, it's probably the biggest one out there right now. And you know, so that does make it difficult. I mean, I know for a fact when shoe company deals were up, or I should say apparel companies were up with certain universities, they stayed with a certain apparel company because the coaches said, we can't change because I've got recruits in the pipeline in this particular one. So we can't take more money from whatever. We got to stay the course because we got, you know, that there's another example of what you're saying. So, man, isn't it a complicated relationship?
Hey, a couple of things about your team. First, number one, I traveled with them. I think I sent you a note, man. What great dudes. I don't think sometimes coaches, you know, we all hear about the bad things, but I'm sitting in the middle, and none of those kids knew me. I'm just sitting there, and they were just freaking awesome, Mike. That's great.
I appreciated you reaching out, and you know, it's one of the reasons I love coaching here, Danny. And I you know, everybody's got great kids, but I get a neat young man here. I was down with Rex Fluger and TJ Gibbs all day yesterday, and they kind of stole the show down there at media day. I mean, hell, we were picked ninth, but they stole the show because, you know, everybody, their personalities come out, and they're fun to get on the plane with and talk to. And you're right, but this particular group, when you ran into them in Atlanta when we were coming back from the Bahamas, neat group of guys, were a little younger. They come in. Talk about low maintenance. They come in, they work, they do their thing. You know, there's been no drama. It's been just refreshing to be around them every day.
Yeah, but Rhett Pfluger, he rolled in with a fanny pack.
I love that kid.
That's so Hollywood. It's so predictable. And man, did he get mileage off of it, right? He is good. He is so good. I mean, it was the buzz of Charlotte, Rex Flinders' fanny pack.
I mean, that was absolutely hilarious. But let's get to your team. You know, your team, look, you're Bonzi Colson-less, you're Matt Farrell-less, two guys that were kind of mainstays and, you know, guys that you kind of played through. But you still got an interesting team. But you got some guys that are banged up. Prentice Hub, obviously banged up, you know, with some injury issues as freshman, terrific point guard. And you got DJ Harvey. Where are those guys right now in terms of their recovery and their ability to be ready to play once the season starts?
Well, I'm really excited for the scrimmage Sunday because Hub has been back about 3 weeks from the ACL that cost him his senior year in high school. And we could start him Sunday night. I mean, he could start with Hooker and Gibbs on the perimeter. That's how good he's been. And he gives us another playmaker, ball handler, decision maker. Harvey's been back a week and has shown no effects of the microfracture. He seems to be trending the right way, and he's going to play a lot Sunday. So I didn't have those guys during the foreign tour. And obviously those guys are two of our four or five best players. But they are back. They're healthy. You know, Gibbs and Pfluger kind of set the tone for us, and it's a pretty good place to start because those guys have been around and have been in and have done a good job leading. And then you rotate to some, you know, a little bit of some unknown guys. They're talented guys, but they're unknown, and we just kind of have to grow. But it's a, you know, our young guys are, they're really skilled, and they're ready to go, and they fit how we play. And I'm hoping we can get back into the offensive flow that we've been known for here. Last year, offense was hard for us at times with the bodies that were down week to week. But we're, you know, Hub and Harvey are back, and they'll play a lot on Sunday, and I'm excited about that.
How's Dane Goodwin doing?
Doing very well, Dan. Man has a feel for the game. You know, he's got a stroke, you know, but he's also can put it on the floor. Amazing how he defensive rebounds from his position. I look at our stats after 16 practices, and he gets his hands on stuff. He's got a toughness about him. There's an edge and a toughness about him. He is going to be part of things. He's ready to play as a freshman.
Well, you've got a bunch of freshmen. My guy Nate Leshefsky, I mean, like, he's about 6'11", 190 pounds, it seems like. But, like, every time he shoots it, you think it's going in. Like, a guy like that, you've always had a guy like that. How ready is he to come and compete at this level and help you win the ACC?
Yeah, and, you know, you remember it. Well, we've got about 15 pounds on him. That's why this summer was so important. And he has had a very good summer, and he was very good in the Bahamas. And you're right, he stretches it. We've had a number of guys like that. He stretches it from that position. It keeps our spacing good. It keeps our floor open so our guards can get into the lane. But right now he is in a very good rhythm, and he is going to have a big role and would have a chance eventually to start for us, in my opinion.
Hey, Mike, how do you at Notre Dame – scheduling has become such a thing now – is Notre Dame one of those schools where you can go pay somebody $60,000, $70,000 to come in? How do you go about it?
We do. We have some bye games, you know, and our number's up around 85 to 90
wow.
now. And some people are paying, you know, six figures for guarantee games when you're bye games. And we'll buy, you know, six, seven, eight, you know, guarantee games. We get in there and then we try and have four power games in the non-league. You know, that's kind of the philosophy we stayed with, even though as we move forward in next season, like the Big Ten this year, we're going to 20 league games. So that makes you think about your non-league situation to the point where, you know, don't break the spirit of your team in the non-league because you've got 20 league games now, and there's plenty of power. The one thing about our league is there's always, and going to 20 league games even more so, there's always enough power in the league where you have a chance to get resume wins and, you know, be on the board and be in the discussion on Selection Sunday. And so you're just trying to balance, you know, enough good non-league stuff to get you ready but not getting crazy about it because of the league we play in, and then 20 league games coming next year. Actually, next year, the ACC is going to open the season. The first three nights of play, which I think is like November 5, 6, and 7, we are going to play. The ACC is going to play. There's going to be seven games. We're going to come out of the gate with a league game right out of the gate, and then we have a December league date. So, obviously, the timing is good because we're launching the ACC network in August, and there are a lot of those factors in it, but we're playing a league game right out of the gate, which was an interesting discussion 2 years ago in our league meetings with the coach here.
Did you like that? Do you not like that? Do you like? Go ahead.
I love it. I
Do
love
you?
It. I
Good.
I think, Danny. I think in this day and time, and our attitude was, hey, the best league should play right out of the gate. Let's play. We don't have an opening day in college basketball. I struggle for, you know, when we play, and we got some tournaments here, but then there's the football championship. And our feeling was we had to find dates for two more league games anyways, and our attitude was, and I agreed with it, like, let's go right out of the gate and play, and I know we're on the road, so Paul Brazzo told me yesterday, by the way, that Wednesday you'll be on the road. I don't know where you're going yet. I said, all right, well, we signed up for it. Let's go. I don't think it's going to be an every-year thing, but I thought next year, you know, let's do it. Let's give it a shot.
I guarantee you Duke's not on the road.
Well, the Duke's not playing because they're the only one not playing because they'll be in the champions class.
Right.
Remember that?
Yeah.
So they'll be out of that, but the other 14 teams will play.
Nice. Hey, Coach, one other thing before I let – anybody recruit? You recruiting anybody from Andrean? We got anybody coming from the Catholics an hour away?
Doesn't Heron Goody have a cousin?
He's got to.
Heron Goody. God, I need to have a Heron Goody. You know, I wish they would have had more children. You know, gosh, was he good for us. There's nobody right now in our no one from the region on the list right now. But like you, Danny, I never met a guy from the region that's not a tough guy. I like guys from the region.
Well, you're talking to one that is not tough, so I appreciate I appreciate you saying that.
Hey, D-Squared, enough of where you came from and how tough you were, all right?
I said I wasn't.
That was back in the day. Is Notre Dame football back? I mean, you know, America needs to know from you because I know you are an expert on Notre Dame football because you're the happy coach and then you got a little the grumpy football coach.
I've seen it all. We are back, baby. We are back. Okay. We're the real deal. And our route to the playoff, you know, is kind of right there for us. Now, we got to go out to San Diego and deal with Navy on Saturday night, which is always like going to the dentist and going to be tough. We are playing. You know, I look at us. I look at our bodies, especially on the defensive side. And you heard we were recruiting well. Now you can see it. We really recruited well the last couple of years because we have depth on the defense and bodies. And obviously, the quarterback change with the kid Book coming in. Man, he's giving us a shot in the arm. So it's there for us. So people are excited around here.
That's awesome. Well, Mike, we appreciate you coming on. I know this is kind of a crazy time of the year with the start of the season and everything that's going on with the FBI and kind of the microscope college basketball is under. But you're the best, man. No one's better.
We'll get on with you soon, buddy. Thanks again for coming to my event. Seth, Danny came out to our Coaches versus Cancer event, and I'll have to get on with you, Dan, before the crossroads like we always do.
You're the best. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate you.
You guys, thanks, brother. Take care, fellas.
And I would like to share a little interview I had with my man Chris Spatola with the legendary Hall of Fame coach Roy Williams that will also air on Sirius XM ESPNU Radio.
Chris Spatola, Seth Greenberg, now joined by the head coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels, Roy Williams. Coach, do you still get excited this time of year?
For media day?
Don't get it started on every league meeting. He was trying to get it canceled.
That's right. No, for the start of season, start of practice is where you really get excited. I believe it's when I do. The game's coming. It's, oh yeah, we're going to play some games now, but I really get excited at the start of the season. Judd Heathcote one time said the games in blank. I won't say what he said, but I do get excited at the start of the season. Yes.
Coach used to say in league meetings, let's get rid of media day and spring meetings. Am I too far off from the truth?
Only 100% truth. I tried to do that with the commissioner about 5 minutes ago.
Point guards and lockdown defenders are like security blankets for coaches. You lost a terrific leader in Joel Berry. You obviously lost a great energy guy that in Theo Pinson that could defend multiple positions. How different is your practice now and your team now just because you've lost that much experience?
You know, we've got some freshmen who are gifted and in maybe some ways more gifted than Joel and Theo were. But boy, they don't have the energy every day, the enthusiasm, the experience that you're talking about. Joel Berry was a tremendous leader just by his action. I mean, he would get mad if he lost a drill. And so I think we don't have that yet. The young kids are gifted, but they don't have that. And for us, we've got to get Cam Johnson, Kenny Williams, and Luke May to step up and be even more vocal, more energetic, more enthusiastic about the leadership part, because Joel would say anything, and Theo said everything. so we really had something that was really good there.
When you go through your catalog of the great players you've coached in your career, I'm curious where Luke May fits in, which is to say, when you think about Luke May, what does he represent, not just for your team this year, but historically for you?
You know, I've said many times, Wes Miller, that's a coach at UNC Greensboro, and I got almost 100% out of his ability. He got his potential almost as well as you could ever expect anybody to. Seth did it himself. You have guys, you say, boy, they could have done a little bit more. They could have done a little bit more. Well, Luke May's almost got there as well. That doesn't mean he can't get better. But my gosh, what he's been able to accomplish so far, you have to feel very good about that. Oh, yeah. But this year, senior, I expect more out of him. And that's the thing with Luke, because he's a very bright, very intelligent youngster. Business school graduate is going to be easy for him. And second semester, he's got to take piano or something. I don't know what it is, but he'll be finished at the middle of the year. So he's just that great individual. But every time I think about him, I do go back and say, boy, is he getting as much as he can? And he's coming close to getting as much as he can. And here I am saying I got to have more out of him this year.
You've got three freshmen, as I watched practice yesterday, that kind of just jump out at you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kobe White, obviously, Nasir Little, and Rashawn Black. I mean, those three guys, you watch those guys and you say, one, they're kind of like Carolina players.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at Kobe and his ability to push and his speed and Nasir's athleticism. Those three guys are going to have to step up and mm-hmm. play significant minutes. You haven't had to do that, really, in the last 4 or 5 years. How different is it getting this young group to up to speed with the schedule you play and the expectation you have?
You know, it is go back to Joel Berry and Theo Pinson, Justin Jackson, their freshman year. We had to get them to come and play. But we haven't had it since then where freshmen's had to come in and do this. Last year, a freshman had to play in the big spot, but most of the time we only had one of those guys on the court at a time. But these three guys, I think they are gifted enough. I think they're coachable enough, talented enough. They have enough understanding of the game. And the other part is they have to have all those because we're going to play them. And I think that their ability and their enthusiasm, the way they've worked, requires you to play them too. But you also have to understand they're freshmen. You're going to live through some tough times with them.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, particularly to that point guard position, as you go about determining who is most effective for you, what are you looking for out of your point guard?
So much. I think we ask a point guard probably to do more than almost any team. They call our defense, they call our offense, you know, and I very seldom stand up and call a play. I very seldom stand up and call a defense, and the point guard does that every possession. It's strange because we've had a lot of guys. I mean, I'll go back to Adonis Jordan at Kansas, Jock Vaughn at Kansas. 3 years in a row, I started a freshman at point guard. I started Jeff Boshian, and I started Kirk Heinrich, and then I started Aaron Miles. And the year that I started Aaron Miles, I played all three of them. So we played three point guards and went to the Final Four and then 02, I think it was. But Ty Lawson did it. Bobby Frazier did it. Marcus Page did it halfway. Kendall Marshall did it halfway through his freshman year. Marcus Page did it. So it's hard. They've got to think the game and still play. You know, everybody says, don't think, just play. Well, I don't think you can do that. You got to use your brain. And so we spend a lot of time on the what we feel the important things mentally in the game with those freshmen. And it's a bigger adjustment for them mentally than it is playing. But I do try to put them in a situation where when they play, they have the ability to do that, and we give them things that they can be successful at.
there's a little bit of a dark cloud over our game now, something that we all really love and appreciate. When I say just college basketball FBI investigation, what's the first thing as a lifer, a guy that is so invested in the game, what's the first thing that goes through your mind?
When I was told, I said, oh, my gosh. That's exactly what my – oh, my gosh. And then you get more information and more information. But, Seth, I'm one of those guys, I think the glass is half full. I think the game is in good shape. Do we have problems? Yes. No question. But when the original thing came out, there were four coaches. We have 351 Division I schools, and each one of those schools has roughly four coaches. You're talking about 1,400 to 1,500 people. If any segment in society had that, they'd be thrilled to have that. But ours is such a major focus issue of college athletics is men's basketball. We don't want that percentage. We don't want what's happened, and it's bad. But I do believe that the college game is healthy. 1906, I think it's when the NCAA was formed, and it was formed because there were some bad things going on in football between University of Chicago or University of Illinois. So we've had problems all the time, but that doesn't mean our game is a problem. That doesn't mean that it's ready to throw it in the trash can. And but they're scary issues. They're things that we don't want to deal with, but we have to deal with. And hopefully some good things will come from this.
The NBA is talking about starting this G League mm-hmm. for elite players coming into college, potentially into the NBA high school seniors, paying them $125,000 for 1 year. And mm-hmm. that way it's kind of a way to kind of get around the one and done rule. Mm-hmm. When you heard the NBA talking like this, what kind of impact do you think it'll have on our game?
Well, the second part of the question, what kind of impact it'll have, I have no idea. I think we'll have to wait and see. My first thought was, my gosh, they're making again rules for their game. And that's what they should do. And the tough thing is we have to react to that. But those are rules for them. I'm sitting back and starting thinking about the practicality of it. Okay, if they say 12 guys, okay, what about number 13? You know, it's like when you were coaching, I'm still coaching too, and you're still looking at it, you're still involved. We have all these ratings. Okay, you want number 21 or you want to give me number 22? You know, how do you do that? I mean, the practicality of it is it's going to be interesting, and I don't think we can make any judgment until we see it. There are some kids out there that just would like to take that $125,000 over going to college. That's fine. I really don't have any problem with that. But I do think there's also a factor in there that we don't think about enough is we're setting some of those kids up for failure. How have you got an 18-year-old that's in some smaller town riding a bus to games and with guys in that locker room who are 10 years older? You know how freshmen have guys who are 4 years old. We got guys in there that are trying to hang on playing the G League because I may get called up or something like that for a 10-day contract. How's that 18-year-old going to be in that same world with a guy who's 10 years older than he is? So the practicality of it, I think we'll have to wait and see. I'm a little skeptical of it, but again, they make rules that they think's good for them, and that's what they do.
The health of this league, how healthy would you say the ACC is from a basketball perspective right now?
Wow. I cannot imagine it being any more healthy or healthier. I guess either one, I guess, is proper English, but I just can't imagine them. I was in the ACC as an assistant coach when we had seven teams. Now we have 15, and 15 great programs, 15 great universities, 15 great athletic departments. And the league is so strong, and everybody says, well, the ACC is overrated, but nobody wants to play that conference schedule that we have either. So I think the league is in great shape.
20 games you're going to.
Yeah, I'm not in favor of it. It's.
I sat in a room when it was going to go from 16 to 18. Everyone voted against that.
Yeah.
What?
It shows how much emphasis, how much influence, excuse me, that the coaches have. And this one, we didn't even vote. All of a sudden, I'm told in July we're going from 18 to 20. And it's hard for me because everybody says, okay, we got to be partners. I don't know partners who would spring something on me like that. But what it does to me personally is the last 4 years, our schedule, strength of schedule by the tournament committee has been ranked number one, number six, number six, number one. So 4 years in a row in the top six. And I asked one guy, I said, you'd rather us play the 15th team in the ACC or us play Kentucky? Oh, well, inventory-wise, I'd much rather see you play Kentucky. I said, well, we play 20 games. I'm not going to play as many of those types of games. So I don't think they gain as much myself. But it's what it is, and They're going to send me a schedule, and I'll try to coach the schedule that's in me.
It's hard because you're going to play those 20 games. The ACC Big Ten Challenge is 21.
It's really 21. Yeah. Regardless of what I would say, it's 21.
And exempt to fit gets you to 25, and then you're going to have, let's face it, you're going to play one or two of those other quote-unquote games.
Well, this year we start a series with Gonzaga. We play Gonzaga at home, and next year we go to their place. And we've played Arizona like that. We've played Tennessee. We just finished a series with Tennessee, and they're picked to be one or two in the Southeast. You can't play every game like that. You have to, in my mind, play some games that your kids can get some confidence from. But our league schedule is so good, and as you say, I'm going to play some of those teams. But we've got to drop some of those. I'll give you this example, and I hope I'm not going too long
for
it. One year, when I was at Kansas, we played Georgia the first game. Hugh Durham would guard you, right? I mean, his guys are going to guard you. The next game, we played Bob Knight's Indiana team in Indianapolis. They're going to guard you. I had two kids on that team that year that were first-year players for us. One year a Juke, one was a Juco, and one was a freshman. They did not shoot the ball again until January, okay, because Coach Durham's squad and Coach Knight's squad, they just backed off of it, and you say, come on, baby, aren't you going to shoot? And they missed the shot, and then the next one gets tighter and tighter. I couldn't get those guys to be confident at all until January. Yeah. So you need some of those games where you guys can get some confidence. And what I do is I always play a couple of teams in our state to try to give them some money too. And you can't play every game. Every game can't be Duke, Notre Dame, Syracuse, Virginia. You got to have some of those other games too.
Last question, and one I did want to ask you. You know, they experimented with some rules in the NIT last year. I don't know how closely you followed that, but as we're in between cycles on rules. Is there anything as you look at the game that you say, you know, we need to tweak that, we need to fix that, we need to add that?
Yeah. You know, Chris, nothing jumps out at me. I will say that we were in Philadelphia in practice at the 76ers facility before scrimmage that we had last weekend. They had a 4-point line there just on the practice court. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, my guy shoots one from here. He better make the daggum thing. Kind of thing. But not anything that jumps out at me. I'm a guy, again, and I like what we have, and you know, I kept the same putter for 27 years. So if I get something I like, I'm going to keep it. But there's nothing that jumps out of me. I think we made great strides in trying to take some of the physicality out of the game and make it more free-flowing. It wouldn't bother me if we went to 15 seconds on a shot clock. You saw us practice like that yesterday, you know. So, but I like what we have. Yeah.
He said the same putter, but I tell you what, he's got that technology in the driver and the iron.
My driver is not the same driver now. Let's be honest. My driver's 25 models in the last 26 years.
Well, he could use that putter. He would borrow that putter for a round.
My game's backwards.
Same driver, no. 25 drivers in the last 26 years. Putter I kept for a long time. The original one I kept for a long time.
Yeah, that's terrific. Coach, good luck this season.
Thanks,
thank
Chris.
You.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's Coach Roy Williams.
Thank you, guys.
D squared. We'd like to thank Final Four Mike Bray for joining us today. And how about our sponsor, ZipRecruiter? You know, if things don't go well, we can always go to ZipRecruiter and maybe be a little bit more employable. And then how about our listeners? You know, they need to go and subscribe to the show, rate the show, give it a great rating, because you know what? It is the world's greatest podcast. And review the show in the Apple Podcast or wherever you listen to your podcast, because there's nothing better then Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.